George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams, First Chief Justice John Jay. Names synonymous with the spirit of our country, founding fathers of the USA. Over 200 years ago, they shook off the chains of tyranny from Great Britain by divine call. Citing 27 biblical violations, they wrote the Declaration of Independence with liberty and justice for all. But something happened since Jefferson called the Bible the cornerstone for American liberty and put it in our schools as a light. Or since Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, Patrick Henry said, our country was founded on the gospel of Jesus Christ. We eliminated God from the equation of American life, thus eliminating the reason this nation first began. From beyond the grave, I hear the voice of our founding fathers pleading, you need God in America again. Of the 55 men who formed the Constitution, 52 were active members of their church. Founding fathers like Noah Webster, who wrote the first dictionary, could literally quote the Bible chapter and verse. James Madison said, we staked our future in our ability to follow the Ten Commandments with all our heart. These men believed you couldn't even call yourself an American if you subvert the word of God. In his farewell address, Washington said, you can't have national morality apart from religious principles, and it's true. Because right now we have nearly 150,000 kids carrying guns to these war zones we call public schools. In the 40s and 50s, student problems were chewing gum and talking. In the 90s, rape and murder were the trend. The only way this nation can even hope to last this decade is for God in America.
Everyone who made those stars. Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and our special guest tonight is Mr. Gregory Douglas. We're going to be talking about the assassination of President Kennedy. And you may say, well, why worry about that? That happened 40 years ago. Well, I think that we have to worry about it because, of course, for 40 years, there's been an organized effort on the part of the media and people at the highest levels of government to conceal what really happened. And I probably have at least 20 books. We've done dozens of interviews with people, each one of who had part of the story, or maybe none of the story, about what really happened that fateful day in November of 1963. But the guest we're going to have this evening has written a book. Well, he wrote the book, but he uses the basic documentation, papers that were given to him by Mr. Robert Crowley, who was the Deputy Assistant Director of Covert Operations for the Central Intelligence Agency. The papers were given with a proviso they would not be used until after Mr. Crowley's death. And, of course, there is a file there on the Kennedy assassination. And in that were the papers discussing how Mr. Crowley and James Angleton and several other CIA people decided that they were going to kill the American president, how they did it, who they went to, how he was killed, who did the killing, what happened to the assassins. An amazing, amazing story that is certainly very valid. There's a great deal of other information in the book that tends, from my point of view, to validate it, including a list of about 4,000 people in the United States that Mr. Crowley felt were people he could contact. They were people from retired intelligence officers organization, but many other people as well that Mr. Crowley were keeping track of. They would be people he would be able to contact and get information on it. One of them happened to be my next door neighbor, a very quiet doctor in the community where I live, who was always taking long trips and gone for long periods of time. A very, very interesting background. Obviously, he had been an intelligence officer within the military, which gives, of course, a great deal of personal credence from my point of view to the rest of the story. Mr. Douglas, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, of course, let's talk a little bit about how you happened to meet Mr. Crowley and how it was that he happened to give you these amazing, amazing papers.
Well, when I did my book on Heinrich Mueller, the chief Gestapo chief who had disappeared at the end of the war and later showed up in Switzerland working for Colonel Critchfield and then was taken into the CIA and as one of the premier experts in communism and then brought to the United States under Operation Apple Pie, Crowley, who'd been with this agency, the CIA, since 1948 and who knew Mueller, heard about this book and was being loudly denied by the CIA, so he contacted me and said that he had read the book and he knew Mueller and that he thought it was great that somebody was writing about it.
Well, of course, now here we're talking about the head of the German Gestapo, brought to the United States, given a plus job. Yeah, of course, the Americans are supposed to believe that all the Nazis were punished at Nuremberg, but the truth of the matter is many of them were brought to the United States under one or another program. But we can't let the American people know that because we have this perception, the wicked Nazis and the good Americans. And yet, of course, we were quite willing to hire Mr. Mueller, despite the fact he'd been the head of the German Gestapo, which, of course, is epitomized in so many motion pictures, and that's our reality. We brought this man to the United States, and you had actually gotten some of his papers and written a book about him. In fact, a series of books. One we carry, in fact, several we carry. One is volume one of the Gestapo chief, the papers of Heinrich Mueller, and then you have another one on his diaries, which we also carry as well. The head of the Gestapo here in the United States, and of course, the CIA doesn't want that information out, do they?
No, they don't want it out because... In the first place, the propaganda machines during the war spoke about how evil the Germans were, and how all of them the worst for the Gestapo, and then to have them actually using this man, who was, by the way, wanted for various and sundry things, and no, they wouldn't want it out. There'd be terrible uproar from the Jewish community. There'd be terrible uproar from the, let's say, an American that lost his family during, or his father in the war, and killed maybe in the Battle of the Bulge, and he would be furious to think that this had happened. But we also hired people from Stavak, which was the Iranian secret police. We brought them over here, even though they were far worse than anything the Gestapo could have done. And we have used Russian KGB people, some of whom were certainly not very nice. We don't want to admit this. The CIA won't even admit how many people have parking permits for their parking lot. Everything is secrecy, because if the public ever found out to the degree and extent to which they've been deliberately misled by their agencies in this country, is just as is happening now. By the way, apropos of this, it just came out on the news. I was watching it a few minutes ago. This orange or pink or green alert that they've been shrieking about on the top of their lungs, everything's happening. People are buying duct tape and sealing their kids' mouths up because of the Arabs are going to do something. It turns out it's a fraud. It turned out that the Arab who told them that this was going to happen, they gave him a lie detector test, and he failed it.
But you would have thought they would have given him the lie detector test before they terrorized the American people.
No. The horrifying thing is that they knew the results of the lie detector test before they got up in front of the American public and told them this.
Oh, they did?
Well, oh, yes. I think it's on Hardball tonight.
All right. Well, of course, they're playing games with our minds. And when the American people understand that, then a lot of things that are going on will begin to make sense. But go right ahead.
Well, no. The idea here is this: that these agencies don't start out to be evil. I mean, in fact, there's many idealistic people who work for them, people who think they're doing a very good job. But when it gets to the very highest levels, and it gets to the directors of this, the deputy directors of that, they have no morality anymore. They feel that they are the determinants of what has to be done, and we, as the American public, who pay their bills and pay the butcher's bill when their kids come back in rubber bags to Dover, we have to be told nothing. Now, for example, the American public feels that maybe the Iraqis are bad. They feel the American public feels that maybe we ought to do something about Saddam Hussein, who's no worse a bully than the other right-wing people we support in various countries. And they've been telling the news reporters, they've been telling the pollsters, the Europeans are telling us, go through the UN first. You Americans, it's stressed the UN and how important the UN is and determining these things and working on cooperative ventures. And now the UN says, no, we have to finish our investigations. And Bush is saying, no, let's attack now. Now, you see, I had a friend of mine who's very conservative tell me, and he was not a Clinton fan, and he told me the other day, in all seriousness, he said, you know, Bush is making Clinton look very good. And I think that's an amazing statement to hear from someone. But it all boils down to deception. For example, the British have released a very important intelligence briefing on Iraq, which General Powell and others in America said was a brilliant denunciation of Saddam Hussein. It's absolutely convincing that we should attack this man. It turns out it was written by a high school student 10 years ago and is totally out of date, and they knew it at the time.
He's down here at the Monterey.
Yeah, he's up in Monterey, right. But he was just a kid when he wrote it.
Academy, right.
Yeah, I know people up there. It's an intelligence training school, mostly linguists. But the thing is, this is entertaining, but we have to pay the bill on this, you and I. We have to pay. Do you know how much they figure it's going to cost to go into Iraq? Billions, $3 billion. The economy has gone into a landslide, gone into a slope. Any attempt on the part of the stock market to recover itself is being stifled by these orange alerts and these threats of war. People are not going to invest, and so the market stays depressed. People get out of work. Businesses collapse because they can't begin to make money anymore. But the people in the White House and their friends are ideologically inclined to go after the Iraqis for solely ideological reasons. Nothing to do with oil. People say, oh, it's just oil. No, it isn't. And in doing so, they put out a smokescreen of lies. And I think that anybody who's ever seen the movie Wag the Dog, which is a satire, we realize that this, in fact, is the truth, or that we are constantly lied to, and that there are groups of people in the United States and in Europe who decide what's going to happen. They tell their people. These people don't sit in the White House. They don't sit in number 10 Downing Street. They put them there.
All right, well, let's get back to, of course...
Sorry to digress, but I'm...
But I think because there's so much here about Mr. Crowley. So Mr. Crowley, Deputy Assistant Director of Covert Operations for the CIA, had known Heinrich Müller, the head of the Gestapo, and once again, I mentioned that the book, The Gestapo Chief, and the diaries of Heinrich Müller are both available if anybody wants to know by calling 1-800-544-8927. But, of course, then Mr. Müller... eventually died, I think, about 83.
1983, yeah.
Right, but certainly the gentleman from the CIA had known him. He contacts you, and because he's known him, he's interested, and you're putting out these books. The fact that you have verified what has been kept from the American people all these years, and that is that Heinrich Müller, the head of the Gestapo, was brought back here. So now you have an association, you're talking with Mr. Crowley, and certainly he knows all the CIA secrets, but eventually he begins to tell you, or at least allude to certain things, and eventually when he passes away, or before he passes away, he gives you all these papers to be utilized only after he's gone?
Yeah, that's actually what happened. What happened was Bob Crowley had been a man of enormous power, and he was a huge man. He's 6'7" or something, a very intelligent man, had a marvelous speaking voice. It was a very competent person. Now, I don't agree with some of his views. I think he was far too bloodthirsty, but I don't think that he was cruel. I think he felt that he had to do certain things. And the Kennedy assassination was a shocking thing, and it's subsided somewhat, but it shocked the American psyche for years because eventually people realized they were being grossly lied to by everybody. And then, of course, we had people like General Posner's idiotic book. People like him give sycophancy a bad name. The government says, write a book, Gerald. And he says, right. So he does. And he says, the Warren Report was wonderful. They never lied.
Well, of course, we know that there's so many books that point out that the Warren Report really was not an effort to reveal but to conceal what happened. And yet, of course, how can we ever find out what really happened? Well, of course, your book is the smoking gun, in my estimation. It is the one that's written directly by somebody. The information comes directly from the man who was intimately involved with this. He had nothing to lose. There's no reason why he would have falsified the information. I think he probably wanted history to understand that they felt they were doing the right thing for
America.
That's
exactly. It was a last minute. Many people had deathbed conversions, you know, and I think this was something on the part of Mr. Crowley. I think he felt that people needed to know that he felt they were justified, and they actually did. This wasn't a capricious thing. It wasn't an act of viciousness. They felt that it had to be done, mainly because they saw Kennedy as a threat to the CIA's omniscience as a most powerful organization in this country. It set the foreign policy in this nation for years. Many of the top CIA people were Harvard and Yale graduates. They were East Coast establishment, in other words, and they had many friends who were in business and the CEOs of businesses or major stockholders. And if a small country somewhere objected to some of the business practices of their friends, maybe, and that they would run to them and say, Harry, can't you do something about this? The people down in Angola are trying to take over our coal mines. So they would say, all right, that's fine. We'll take care of you. So I know this in my own family. I can talk about Guatemala, but let's talk about some non-existent country. They say, look, we're going to lose a lot of money. So the CIA prepares a report saying that the government of Angola or Zambezi or whatever, they're communists, Mr. President. They're Marxists. They're well known as Marxists. They're going to take over the country, and then the next country will fall in the next one, and we're going to have a communist republic in Africa. The president says, my God, this is here. And they show them charts and photographs and all kinds of stories. And the president says, well, what do you think? They say, well, we really should overthrow the government. Yes, we should overthrow the government, assassinate the president, replace him with somebody we trust. The president says, go ahead. Just don't put my name on it. That's what Eisenhower liked to do. I don't want my name on it. So they would go and do it. And they would replace this person who was annoying them. And we put him in with somebody who they felt was amenable to this and that, and then they say, you see, liberty has been restored. In Guatemala, it was the same. I can tell you about that because my family was involved in it. They were connected with United Fruit Company and Gray Steamship Company. And I remember when Guzman wanted to liberalize the country, and he said the United Fruit Company owned everything, and they wanted some more money coming back into the country rather than all leaving. And so the second he started that, the United Fruit Company went to the CIA and said, hey, we'll lose all of our plantations down there. So the CIA went to the president and convinced him that the And there was Eisenhower, and they convinced Eisenhower that this Guzman was a communist, an evil communist. So they poured huge amounts of money into the opposition, because everyone has an opposition in politics. And the man by the name of Castillo Armas, and he was of course put forward as a great libertarian and a Democrat and a wonderful man. And they went to Poland and they bought Nazi weapons from the Second World War and equipped his army with them. And of course Guzman was overthrown. They allowed him to escape because he hadn't done any damage, and he was allowed to go somewhere else. Now this other fellow came in, Castillo Armas, and he took over. Well, wonderful. We now have our man in there now. They're not going to nationalize the United Fruit Company's plantations. Well, Castillo Armas got to reading some of the material and decided, you know something, Guzman was right. They're raping us. Guess what? Someone shot him in the head. No one knows who did it, of course. It's maybe the canary. But in any case, he was dead. And from that minute on, Guatemala's been in a state of constant upheaval, and the number of people who've been killed and the property that's been destroyed is appalling. The CIA doesn't care.
Okay, well, let's get back, of course, to why the CIA wanted to kill Kennedy. And we're talking about somebody wants to know who the men are. Well, they're talking about James Angleton. Certainly there was Robert Crowley. And who were the other? There were four men involved.
Well, the question, anybody who reads these things, you have to ask one question. Why did it happen? Was there a reason for it, and how did it happen? Let's talk about why first. The CIA was getting information from neutral sources and from their agents in Russia that the Russians were getting a hold of some very, very sensitive in-house material. It was basically CIA. It was coming from the CIA weekly reports, which were circulated at the very highest level in Washington, and still are. Only a few people get them. They had 20, 15, or 20. Joint Chiefs of Staff, the President, and so forth. So this panic, where was this information coming from? Somebody in the CIA was must have been doing it, and they were running around in circles like a dog chasing his tail.
In other words, the Soviets were getting CIA briefing material.
Yes, they were getting
and
briefing
material. The CIA,
material.
Of course, had agents over in Moscow, and they realized this, so they're trying to find out who is leaking the information to the Russians.
Well, Angleton was going crazy. He was never very well wrapped anyway. And Crowley suggested that each one of these reports have an additive to it. A section, a paragraph. It was very, very interesting, but not very important. But so interesting that if it was repeated, that they would hear about it. Entertaining, amusing, you know, something that would strike your mind. It didn't give away state secrets, but it was very sharp. And each one of these reports had a different additive, completely different. Then they would wait to see the feedback, and they'd say, aha, you see, it's this, and this is the one that went to so-and-so. And that's how they do it. So, of course, they found this out. They said, oh, my God.
They found it was going to the president.
The president
was leaking information to the Soviets. Now, why was the president leaking information to Khrushchev and the Soviets?
Well, number one, he realized that the CIA was building its own agenda, and that he couldn't trust them. He couldn't trust them. He'd asked them not to do things. Then there was Operation Northwoods, which we will discuss when in a moment here. He was horrified by this, that they were going to attack the United States, attack American military units disguised as Castro Cubans so that the war could start.
Now,
he forbid it.
All right, for our listeners, Operation Northwood was a plan by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and whether the CIA had input, I don't know, but it has eventually been declassified, so we know what it has. And incidentally, any of you who out there who would like a copy of that, well, you get the book Genocide, you'll get a copy of Operation Northwood if you ask for it. But it's a plan by which they were going to Cubans, weren't really Cubans, they were people who looked like Cubans, dressed in Cuban uniforms, attack Guantanamo naval base, sink our ships, kill people, anything to provoke an attack. One of them was to shoot down a plane that was apparently filled with students on the way to South America. Blame it on Fidel Castro. But all of these were means by which they were going to provoke a war. Would that be a fair statement?
That's a fair statement, but the CIA was involved in it. And when Kennedy ordered it stopped, he stopped it just before it was launched. And he was absolutely furious that they would do this. And they lied to him, too, by the way. Eisenhower thought it was a grand idea, but he was not president, and they didn't tell Kennedy. When he found out about it, he ordered them to stop, and they continued. So he broke up, he removed Dulles as head of the CIA, fired him. He fired Bissell. He fired General Cabell. All of these are people who were in charge of the operations, and said, I'm going to break you up and scatter you to the winds. And that's what signed his death warrant.
And, of course, basically, then, Kennedy is going around the CIA, and he's going directly through Bobby Kennedy to a Soviet correspondent. What was his name?
Grigory Bolshakov.
Bolshakov. And, of course, Bolshakov is going to Khrushchev. So you have this vehicle by which the leaders of the two countries are talking, independent of the State Department, independent of the CIA. And for anybody who'd like to check that, we actually have an article out of Newsweek magazine that talks about the Cuban Missile Crisis and, of course, Kennedy being in touch with Bolshakov, who was in touch with Khrushchev. That's how they avoided the Cuban Missile Crisis and able to settle that.
So it's a checkpoint, Charlie, too, and a few other points that were made. But, you know, I'm not a Kennedy fan, but I will say that he did behave in a statesmanlike manner, and we were awfully close to an atomic war at one time, and this is his method of defusing it, and in fact, it worked.
Okay, and so, but now the CIA, of course, is furious. Number one, he's President Kennedy is going to begin dismantling the CIA. He's going around the CIA. Even worse than that, he's contacting Khrushchev independently and not through them.
Yes.
And so they decide they're going to have to get rid of him.
Well, you summed it up very well. It's exactly what happened. So then they decided that having discovered this and worked it out, tapping Bobby Kennedy's telephone to be absolutely certain this was going on, and then the decision was made, well, we can't impeach Kennedy. He's too popular, and things might come out about our activities. So rather than impeach him, we might just as well kill the bastard. And that's exactly what they decided to do.
Now, of course, this is all laid out in the papers that you have from Mr.
Yes,
Crowley.
Yes, what I have, the book consists basically of two reports and a listing of telephone conversations and conferences. The two reports consist of a Russian report on the Kennedy assassination from their point of view. U.S. is a Russian intelligence report. Now, this cover letter was 1978, so it was some years after the assassination. And this was signed by Colonel Vedder B. Driscoll, who was in charge of Soviet intelligence section of the Defense Intelligence Agency. He was there in 1978, and I verified all this, and that is his signature.
And, of course, basically it is his analysis of what the Soviets thought about the Kennedy assassination.
Yes, yes. In other words, the Russians, it's in translation. And you have maybe 40 or 50 points, 1, 2, 3, 4, the Russians say this. And then his report, I probably didn't write it, he had someone else write it, but he signed the cover letter, is an analysis point by point of the Russian points. Yes, they were right about this. No, they were wrong about that. And so I've taken that as it stands and put that into the book in the appendix in the copy of the original documentation. Then I've taken it and built it into the book. I have taken the Russian statement and made comments on it. Then I've taken the American statement and made comments on it. Then I put my own views and author's comments. In other words, I think this, I think that. So you know it's in fact, it's what I think. And it works all the way through. And I took it all the way through. Then I put Operation Zipper in there. Now, Zipper was a 4 or 5 copy, carbon copy document. It was a listing of telephone conversations, meetings, and other get-togethers connected with the assassination, and as usually it's by initials, SG is Sam G. and Khanna. Let's see, JJA is James Jesus Angleton. RTC is Robert T. Crowley. And things like that, for example. Now, the Hoover is mentioned by name, of course. He knew, but he didn't do it. A man named William Sullivan is mentioned. He's mentioned as WS. Deputy Director of whatever it is of the FBI, WS. Well, anybody can look at the book and find it's William Sullivan.
And, of course, they had to bring the FBI in because they had to be absolutely certain.
No, they didn't bring the FBI into it. I think the FBI is the one agency that had pretty clean hands. In other words, let's put it this way. People say, well, they must have known. If they knew, if they found out something, they are not permitted to get up and give press conferences. FBI agents are not allowed to do that. They can't just get up and talk.
Yes, but did Hoover know that?
Oh, Hoover knew.
Hoover knew, right.
Not. I mean, I want it made very clear that I know a number of FBI people. I have great respect for them, and I will tell you very frankly, I don't believe for an instant that any FBI agent was involved in this at all. I think somewhere along the line, information may have been uncovered. But it was not for them to release it. It had to go from them to their district officer to Washington. And then if it was released, it had to be released by Hoover. Nobody in the chain of command could do anything. But I don't think for CIA people were involved in this physically. FBI people, no.
But of course, but the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and Mr. Sullivan both knew about it.
Oh, yes.
And of course, they went right along. In other words, they may not have participated. Their job was to cover it up and to conceal any evidence that might have come forward from
the
FBI.
That's true. But I think that that you will find in many of these agents, people who are field agents, who are very decent people, both in the FBI and the CIA and the Drug Enforcement Agency, the Customs and everything else, who are very, very decent people, very honest, law-abiding, hard-working people. And they take the rap for the people at the top, who never take the responsibility. In Washington, it's shove it down on the person below you, and they can shove it down on someone below them, and eventually some poor person gets it and has to fully retire. And that's exactly what happens. And I mean, people think this is an outrageous attack on the CIA. No, it is an outrageous attack on the leadership of them at that time.
All right. Now, of course, they've decided that they're going to have to assassinate Kennedy, but how are they going to do it? It's kind of, this is a dangerous thing. After all, if the American people found out that the CIA had assassinated Kennedy as they assassinated Mr. New and Mr. Diem and Patrice Lumumba and Trujillo and, in the Dominican Republic and so many other people, why, they might even get into trouble. They might even have to, stand before the bar of justice for murder. So who are they going to get to carry out the murder?
Well, we have to understand something. They have assassins who work for the CIA. It was called Operation Blowback, and I mean, it was working on for some years, but nevertheless, they're not going to get an American to do this, because if he got caught and they couldn't kill him fast enough, it would blow up in their face. So the thing is, it's called, Reagan introduced the phrase, plausible deniability. In other words, well, we didn't like them, we had nothing to do with it. So the first thing they did was they got Crowley, who knew people in Chicago, in the mob, because his father was in the Kelly Nash political machine. Mr. Crowley's father was the superintendent of parks. And as Crowley said, he said, as a superintendent of parks with a small salary, he built a 30-room house with a clay tennis court. You figure it out, he told me. So he knew Sam Giancana. Now, Sam Giancana was head of the mob in Chicago, which is a very powerful mob position. Giancana was certainly not stupid. He had helped the Kennedys get into office by voting the cemeteries often and early. And he figured that once he got in, he got some clout with the Kennedys. He wanted them to stop attacking Jimmy Hoffa because Hoffa was their boy. They were using the pension funds from the Teamsters. And, of course, Joe Kennedy, who hated the mob because they threatened to kill him one time, and he reneged on a booze deal because Kennedy Sr. was a bootlegger. He went after them, which is stupid because the mob doesn't like that. You make a deal with them, they'll carry out their end, but you best carry yours out. So they hated him, but they couldn't do anything to him. It's very hard to kill the president. He's heavily guarded. And they're not going to do that. Whatever you can think about the mob, whatever's odd about them, they're not stupid, especially at the higher levels. They're shrewd businessmen, and they're not going to put their foot into a tiger's mouth. So they said, all right, well, we aren't going to kill him, but we'll put you in touch with our friends in Sicily. There's another mob, the mafia there. And, of course, the CIA asked about this, and mob in Sicily said, I don't think so. Well, let's try the French. So they tried the Union Corse, and this is the Corsican Union, and it was Italian, Franco-Italian. It's an island of Corsica, which is just south of France, and it's French territory. It's mostly Italians, but they're French Italians. And they're known to be very bad. They were running smuggling and drug deals out of Marseille, France, the port of Marseille, and they were well known for this, and they're also much tougher than the Italians and much meaner. And so they agreed to do this. They said, sure, well, we want $100,000 apiece and false papers and so forth. They agreed. The Italians, the mafia, the Sicilians wouldn't touch it. And they were smart. But in any case, they got four assassins. We only know the name of one. His name was Guido Baldolfini. At least that's what was on his papers, because they were looking for him afterwards. But they went first to Quebec, because they speak French, and these are Frenchmen. And they fit in. Someone else said they went to Mexico, but they didn't. They were Mexicans, and they wouldn't be there. So they brought them down. The mob brought them down, put them in a safe house, and they were sent to Dallas. And then they were told what to do and how to do it. Now, they did the job on him. All I know about it, I do not have the disposition of the assassins. They could have had 60 people on the rooftops, for all I know. They could have been firing Gatling guns. I don't know that either. All I know is that the man who shot him was a man named Feeney, and he fired a .223 NATO rifle cut down, which has it's a small caliber rifle cartridge with very, very fast and very flat trajectory.
Now, I'm going to have to interrupt you there because we're going to have to go to the break at the half hour.
Oh, sure.
So we'll be back in just a moment or two with our special guest this evening, which is Mr. Gregory Douglas. We're talking about his book, Regicide, based upon the papers of Robert Crowley. And the reason you haven't heard about this from the major media is they quite frankly don't want you to know the truth. But you'll get it here at this program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our special guest this evening is Mr. Gregory Douglas, and we're talking about his book, Regicide, based upon the papers of Robert Crowley. And so, of course, you were telling us about the man who was standing over in the grassy knoll. Now, was this actually in Crowley's papers telling exactly caliber?
It was. Well, no, some of it was based on all of the information is basically taken from the U.S. reports. The 223 caliber thing is taken from the reports.
Which reports?
The U.S. reports. The DIA reports. They talked about what kind of gun that was used.
I'm sorry, the U.S. DIA.
Defense Intelligence Agency. That's the report that on the Russian.
All right, then this is the report that came from Russia with the comments on it written by an American officer who actually had gone through that, and so they agreed then it was a small caliber, highly explosive bullet. Is that right?
Well, they used what they call. People said, "Well, Gina, I wonder why Kennedy's brain disappeared after the autopsy. It just vanished from the National Archives. It's very easy." Somebody wasn't going to make sandwiches out of it. What happened was this. What they do is they take this bullet and they put it in the vise, point up. Then they take a small bench press and they file a little piece down off the tip and they drill a tiny hole down inside the bullet, not the cartridge, but inside the projectile. And they put a tiny drop of mercury in it. And the mercury goes to the bottom of this drill hole. Then they put a spot of solder on the top, and they file it so that it comes back to a point, because then the ballistics aren't going to be thrown off. If it's flat, it'll start to spin. So when you shoot this at someone, the bullet's traveling at a very high rate of speed. And when it hits somebody's head or a body or something, the bullet slows down very quickly. And the mercury inside flies forward at tremendous velocity, and it explodes the entire cartridge, so it literally blows whatever it hits to pieces. And if you look at the Zapruder tape, you can see Kennedy's head flying to pieces, brains and blood flying up in the air. Now, the miser, and it's also the interesting thing to note is that all of this skull material and skin and hair and everything, brains, flies out behind Kennedy. You can see it.
Of course, yet they're trying to convince us he was shot from behind.
Oh, well, yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, look, laws of physics are not suspended even for presidents. Well, he was shot from the front. And the mercury bullet did it, so the reason for removing the brain and taking it away and putting it in safekeeping from when it disappeared is the fact there'd be traces of mercury in it. And if there was traces of mercury in it, it would be a whole different picture.
Yes.
It wouldn't just be Oswald firing Western rifle ammunition at the man. It would be somebody with a sophisticated killing weapon, because mercury bullets are a European method for assassinating, guaranteeing a kill.
Okay, and so basically, of course, President Kennedy is shot from the front. Of course, then the government has to convince the witnesses who saw it that they did not see the shot coming or hear the shot coming from the grassy knoll. They've got to convince the American people that Lee Harvey Oswald did it, and then they have to, of course, make sure that Lee Harvey Oswald is not around to stand trial. So, and then, of course, even the assassin, the man who kills Lee Harvey Oswald, dies, of course, while he's in prison of suddenly rampant cancer he develops shortly after he agrees to tell the Warren Commission everything he knows. So,
yes.
This is an amazing, amazing thing. And the fact that the American people believe this, well, fortunately, an awful lot of them don't.
I think 70% of the people say they don't believe a word of it. And then, of course, there's only one problem. This is fertile ground. And so we have legions of books, which I've waded through about as many as you have, probably more, just to see what I was getting, because I wasn't a Kennedy assassination fan, and there are some very sensible, logical statements in there. But there's one thing that anybody who wants to write about history, who wants to address a complicated business like the Kennedy assassination, who shot this one, was the dog involved, was this man killed by so-and-so, why did this woman fall off the building, you get all that, and it confuses it. Some of it's just jabber on the part of people, psychobabble. Some of it is deliberate disinformation.
Now, didn't Mr. Crowley tell you that the CIA just loved to have all this conflicting information out there to confuse the people?
Well, yes, and it's not difficult. You see, of all the agencies in the United States, the CIA has been the one who's most assiduously courted journalists, writers, and so forth, because they realize how valuable their productions can be. So they'll take a reporter on the New York Times, they'll take a reporter on the Washington Post, and they will cultivate them. They'll give them inside information on things so they can publish some very interesting material in the paper and get lots of credit and maybe a salary increase. And they help them out with trips and things like that to make them feel comfortable. And then when they say, George, Let's see, we've given you about $30,000 over the last 3 years. We've given you some wonderful tips. Now, here's a story we're going to give you. We want this run with your name on top. You may want to change a word or two and make it sound like it, but we want it run, and we'd like to have it out by next Tuesday. And guess what? There's an article by this man, and it's out on the next Tuesday. And boy, here it is. It's, you know, and the odd thing is people believe what they read in print. And they see it. Well, it must be true. It's right here in the newspaper. And this is what the CIA does for, and has been doing and is still doing it. To this day, we see it, and especially on the Iraqi, quote, Iraqi crisis. And by the way, parenthetically, it's interesting that the Iraqis, who don't seem to have much of anything, and nobody's ever really proven anything, and they point to a photograph and say, see, this is where the death gas is. The Koreans are very dangerous. They have atomic weapons. We know this. They have the delivery capacity. We know this. And yet we've ignored them. Bush has no interest in the Koreans at all. He doesn't care what they do. This isn't part of his agenda. This is not part of his ideological agenda. So we don't care about them. So the people we should be concerned with is Korea, because they can do it, instead of Saddam Hussein, who's not a nice person, who's very nasty, as a matter of fact, but who doesn't have the ability to do much of anything. And the press is trying to convince us now. First they were neutral. Now they're swinging over on the government side. Oh, yes, it must be true. It said so. General Powell, a wonderful man, has told us this. And the public is lied to on everything, on the taxes, for example. Bush wants to do away with everything. He wants to have income tax private. I mean, he wants to have the Social Security privatized. He wants to... Oh, one of the things your listeners should be delighted to know, if they don't know it already, this business of universal spying on American citizens by the convicted criminal Mr. Poindexter, Admiral Poindexter, was going to run this with Bush's gleeful delight that they were going to finally get a hold of these people they didn't like. Mr. Ashcroft, Mr. Bush, and all the rest of these weird people wanted everybody in this country to be watched. And they were going to do it, and they have the capacity to do it. But there was such a stink. William Safire got started on it. It got all over the place. And day before yesterday, it came out that the Congress has said, you will not spy on American citizens. And they discontinued all funding for this thing. And in other words, it's dead.
Well, I hope it's dead. I hope that they don't simply take the money from something else.
If they got caught doing that, there'd be people fried. And people right now, Congress is getting, individual congressmen, getting a great deal of pressure from their constituents for getting madder. See, if Bush wanted to hit Iraq, he should have done it a long time ago after 9/11. Then everybody would have gone wrong. He waited too long. And people are saying, well, wait a minute. As long as our investigators are there, why don't we at least let them finish?
No, Chris, the reason is Bush has to have the attack, and in the next week or two, it's going to be too hot by the first part of April, so we can't have the war. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens this next week, or maybe they'll create an incident to justify the attack. But let's get back, of course, to the Kennedy assassination.
Yes, of
so
course.
President Kennedy is assassinated. The shot is fired from the grassy knoll. We know that. Of course, the intelligence agencies know that. They can't let the American people. I've actually heard some of the witnesses, people who were there in Dealey Paths of that day, saying, you know, the FBI said, I didn't see what I know I saw. And of course, they're almost threatening these people. There were almost 100 people who had witnessed one or another aspect of the assassination who ended up being killed. We have a book called The Dead Witnesses.
Yeah.
And of course, an awful lot of these people died under very mysterious circumstances. Dorothy Kilgallen.
Yeah, Kilgallen especially.
Right. And of course, the CIA would not be above eliminating people. But now, what about the assassins? There were four of them. They got a...
There, according to the reports, there were four of these, according to government reports, and certainly nothing I know anything about, there were four assassins. They were Union corpsmen. They were brought over from France to Canada, and they were infiltrated into this country. Afterwards, they were all supposed to go out to the airport in Dallas, and they would be flown out by private plane back to the East Coast, and they would be put on a commercial flight back to Europe with passports and bags of money. The man who flew them was supposed to be a man named David Ferry. That's according to the government report. And yes, three of them got in the plane. They couldn't find the fourth one, and they took off. None of them have ever been seen or heard from since. It would be appallingly stupid for them to leave in those men alive, and the men who did it should have told better. They know they were dead, but they didn't. And so therefore, I asked Crowley where they went. He said they ended up in crab pots down there in Maryland. So I haven't eaten crab cakes for quite a while after that. But the point is, one man decided he wasn't going to do this, and he decided he was going to go on his own. He didn't trust them, with perfectly good reason. So he took a bus to Mexico, just like Oswald did, and he disappeared. And they went after him. They were looking for Mr. Feeney for about 20 years with the idea to kill him upon the spot. The last I've heard from my French friends is he was living somewhere in Barcelona, but no one knows where. It would be nice to lay my hands on him so I could, but of course neither one of us would survive very long anyway. But the fact of the matter is that this is what they've said. Now, look, a person says, well, how can I believe this? Well, you know, there is a test that you can have that's independent of personal opinions and independent of documentation and so forth, and that is a simple one. If you have a complex problem, like the Kennedy assassination, or like anything, you want to reduce it intellectually, mentally, to its simple commonest denominator. You want to get rid of all the nonsense and the he said, she said, did the goat do it, and maybe it was Martians hanging from balloons. Get away with all that and get down to the basic facts, which are very simple. And when you reduce something to its simplest form, it's called Occam's razor, no entities multiplied beyond necessity, when you get it down there, you can see the answer very clearly. And I was taught that years ago by Jesuits, and I found out that it works. But you have to know how to use it. It's simple. Simply reduce a complex problem to its simplest components. Now, take away all the nonsense and the opinions and the silly books and anything else. Get down to the few basic facts, study it, and it makes sense. If it makes sense, and that's what I hope my book does, if it makes sense to you, and it doesn't weird, it doesn't have strange stories in there that you have a hard time believing, if you don't have to suspend belief to read it, then it probably is true.
Now, because you have a basis in, not on your views, but on the views of the statements by Mr. Crowley, who certainly now he knew this was not going to be released until he was dead, and he had been the deputy director of covert operations for the CIA, worked very closely with James Angleton, and of course there's no reason for him to write it. He's trying to explain to the American people that what they did for the
good of America. He didn't feel sorry for killing Kennedy. He wanted to have the American public understand why they had to do it.
They had to do it. It was the patriotic thing to do.
Well, let me put it to you this way. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but talking to Crowley and knowing some people, as I have in the CIA, they were absolutely morally convinced they were right. I mean, they didn't do this thinking, rubbing their hands, oh, let's just kill him, let's just go kill him. They said, well, I hate to do this, but, you know, it has to be done. And in their mind, they felt they were doing the right thing. I don't agree with them. I think the president was elected by a very slim majority, but he was elected. And by killing him, they simply laughed at the American public. They didn't like Nixon, so they forced him out. They tried to force kill Clinton out, but they couldn't. Now the sitting president now is very likely to be the subject of certain movements of that sort. But the fact of the matter is that we are a nation of law. And when you suspend law and say, well, I'm going to go kill him, then you're committing murder. It doesn't matter whether you like him or not. Voltaire said that killing a human being is a serious crime and is punishable by death, unless, of course, it's carried out in large numbers under the sound of trumpets, i.e. war. And, you know, there is no justification for shooting somebody. I mean, even if you don't like him, even if you don't like the president, even if you're appalled by the president, you don't have the right to kill him unless he's really evil. Now, there is a saying that resistance to tyrants is obedience to God, which is an interesting thing to say, but in the final analysis, we have the machinery, we have the ability to remove presidents, we have the ability to arrest CIA people and put them in jail. They don't do it, but it's there. As long as the law is there, then we have that safety spout. If you plug it up, then there'll be an explosion. But the attitude is this. People say, well, we need a new CIA that will tell the truth. Hogwash. They're not going to tell the truth, even if they replace the vegetable farmer that's in there now with someone else. It's not going to tell the truth. Because it'd be like pulling a tiny string, and a bigger string comes, and pretty soon a whole wall falls down, and then part of a building on top of it collapses. They're not going to do it. There's no way the CIA is going to tell the truth about things, even if the people who did it were dead and buried for years.
Well, now, let's get a little bit into this list of 4,000 names there that is in the book of people that Mr. Crowley had a list of, their names, their addresses, and the information about them. Who were these 4,000 people? Because, of course, that created a little bit of controversy when people found that their names were on the list that you published that was given to you by the Deputy Director of Covert Operations.
All right. Well, what happened was I was getting telephone calls from people claiming to be historians who wanted to see the Mueller files and bring their friend Jimmy with them, and they just wanted to look at them. And they were government people, and the idea was they'd go to court and say, Your Honor, we've looked at these documents, and we said national security is involved. The court would issue a replevin order. They'd come out and seize it. They'd probably steal your watch, too, while they were at it, and you'd never see the papers again. And I was warned, don't let people look. How will I know? Carly said, I have a list of people. I'll have it printed out. And he did. He sent it to me. And I had the original list in the dot matrix printing, which they don't do anymore. And here it is, big fold-out thing. I later gave it to a Washington newspaper publisher because, you know, they were telling me, if you don't give that to us, said the government, we'll put you in jail. So I promptly gave it to this newspaper man, and I put it on the Internet. I said, now you can do it because it's out. So they left me alone. Now, what is this list?
Dude, the government, somebody in the government actually threatened...
I had somebody from the United States government, and I'm not going to tell you who, because, you know, basically they came and they said, you shouldn't have these papers. You have no right to them. He had no right to give them to you, and you have no right to them. This is a matter of national security. I said, very well, I tell you what I'll do. I had them right in my house having coffee with them. I don't dislike them. They're doing their job. And I said to them, if you will tell me which documents you feel are national security violations, I will immediately get them and give them to you. And they looked, well, we don't know what they are. I said, well, I'm sorry. If you have specific information that I am in possession of documents which are secret or classified, and you tell me what they are, because there's a lot of papers from Crowley, I'll give them to you, and there won't be any quail. I'll never use them. And they just basically gave up because they had no idea they were fishing. Now, I'm not blaming them for this. They're doing what they're told to do.
But, of course, the last thing they wanted was for you to have the papers of Robert Crowley.
Well, they don't like me.
Because, of course, they do not want the American people to know.
No, that's the idea. Well, you see, you have to feel that an agent or that the government people on a lower level are simply doing what they're asked to do, and that's the end of it. You can't accuse them of anything. You can't think they're evil. They're not. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that when this got publicized, it was put up on the Internet. Well, there was a huge uproar, and people were furious. The White House got involved in the Clinton White House. There was a big fuss going on. And the story that was put out was, well, this is just a list of retired intelligence people. And don't worry about it, folks. It's okay. Well, you know, there's a good deal of truth in that. Crowley was a member of the AFIO, the Association of Foreign Intelligence Officers, which, by the way, is a CIA operation, a CIA organization. You may be U.S. Army intelligence, you may be Navy intelligence, and you would join the organization. Most of them are CIA people, AFIO. They had a list that they put out in 1993 of 3,000 or 4,000 members, a membership list. Someone realized what it was because it had the addresses and names of these people in there, so they withdrew it. And they made it against the rules for anybody working in this agent, anybody in this organization to give out the info. Crowley was a member at that time, and he had the list. And he went through the list. He had some young guys working with him, and they went through the list, and they checked the names to see whether or not they were still there, and changed addresses and changed name spells, and put a new list together. But it was based primarily on that. About 75% to 80% of the names that are in that long list are members of the Association of Former Intelligence Officers. However, it was updated after the last list appeared in 1993. This list came out in 96 and it was all updated. And there were about 25% of the names on there, including some major U.S. media people, bankers, foreign diplomats, and so forth, listed on there. And that had nothing to do with the AFIO list. And so it came out, and I put it up. And, you know, they don't like me very much, I must say that. But I'm sorry. The thing is that these people, I think Mary Farrell's name was on there, and she was considered to be the doyenne of the researchers for the Kennedy assassination. She's listed. And when that came out, there was hysteria. She retired. She's a very old lady. She's now retired, and she doesn't have anything more to do with it. There was another man whose name was on there that I didn't recognize. I was told this. Who was considered to be a very important person in the research into Kennedy, he suddenly stopped doing research. So,
in other words, what they did is they had people planted in these in these groups that were trying to get to the bottom of the Kennedy assassination, and they were there to confuse the issue, to attack people.
Or to pass on information like so-and-so, an ex-FBI agent, may be talking, maybe he needs a heart attack, or so-and-so, in this building over here, they have some papers, you better go check it out. That's what they do. then they run back to their friends and say, well, we're working on this right now. So and of course, this list didn't do them any good. I mean, it stopped quite a bit of this. You know, it's too bad that we have to have all the secrecy, because most people talk about vast conspiracies. I don't think there are that many. What I think is we have stupid people doing stupid things in the government, and we have the rest of them running around trying to cover it up. That's what it boils down to. Instead of saying, you know, one of the worst things you want to hear in an armaments factory is the word whoops. And I think that you get a lot of that. You have people doing things, or somebody forgets to file a paper or whatever, and you don't know what's ever going to happen on it. And then someone says, no, we didn't get that paper, Harry. Or like Ford Motor Company, they had reports from engineers saying that the certain car was bad. It hit by gas, it hit a truck, and it would blow up. They shredded all the papers. Ford didn't make that car to blow up. When they found out that it did, they didn't want liability, so they went around trying to clean up their act. And that's what the government does most of the time. They clean up their act. And we're the victims of it. We don't know the truth, and eventually the public gets something wind that there's something fishy going on, and it gets worse and worse. They'd be better off to just clear the decks and get everything out of the way, and then it's over with. It's like, don't wiggle a tooth that's infected. Just take it and yank it out.
What we really ought to do is take all the shredders out of the government agencies, because, of course, they have no right to shred these documents. If we were to do that, we'd go to prison.
There are documents. We pay them.
Sure. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Mr. Gregory Douglas. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Mr. Gregory Douglas, and of course, his book is called Regicide. Now, I'd like to just briefly touch on Operation Northwood. We talked about this earlier. It is now a declassified government document. It's described in a book entitled Body of Secrets by James Bamford, which is also available by calling 1-800-544-8927. But, of course, that's where you're going to get the book, Regicide. But this Operation Northwood was one of the most incredible things I've ever read, because it was prepared, at least ostensibly, by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but I'm sure, as you say, with the full support of the Central Intelligence Agency. Would you like to briefly review what they were planning to do to justify getting us into a war with Cuba back in the 1960s, how they were going to manipulate the American people?
Oh, yeah, it'd be easy. Well, first of all, the upset with Castro wasn't the fact he had a beard and was a Marxist. It was the fact that they nationalized Alcoa Aluminum and the sugar industry down there, and they also took the casinos away from the mob, so these people were pressuring to get it back. Castro became an enemy. And they couldn't get rid of him, and they didn't know what to do. They launched commando raids against him, and it didn't seem to have any effect. So they decided we had a full-scale military thing. We needed to go after him militarily. And so they were getting Cuban refugees, the anti-Castro people, and they were going to dress them up in Castro uniforms. We had a couple of Russian MiGs, like the kind the Cuban Air Force had. They were going to repaint them. We had them for evaluation. I got them from the Chinese or somebody. We're going to repaint them with Cuban markings. We were going to attack American targets, like Guantanamo Bay, aircraft full of people, supposedly. And then they were going to launch, this is an interesting thing, attacks against mainland United States, putting bombs and blowing up buildings in various cities, including New York and Miami. And they were to shoot people on the streets. Now, when I heard this, I didn't believe it. And I mean, I said, that's science fiction. That's typical. That's nonsense. But Bamford has an excellent reputation. And so I called him.
This is James Bamford.
He's in the phone
Body
book.
Of Secrets, right?
He's in Washington. I called him on the phone and told him what I was doing. It's very brief. Bamford does not like to talk, but he's not rude. He just doesn't. He's very sparse. But he's an excellent writer. I recommend him his two books, The Body of Secrets and The Puzzle Palace on the NSA. Excellent writing, very clear, very concise, and a good writer. I said to him, I find this almost impossible to believe. Can you cite me chapter and verse on this? He said, sure. I said, wait a minute. He said, here, it's in the National Archives. Here's the file number. You can find it up at College Park. It's right there for anybody to look at. I talked to a friend of mine who was a high-ranking FBI man who said, this is more garbage. I don't believe this. You would never do this. This is insanity. If you publish this, they'll put you away somewhere, lock you up in a nut house. I said, okay, why don't you check it out? He said, I'll do that. I said, I'm not playing poker. I'm not bluffing. He said, then give me the number. Do you know James Bamford? Not personally, but is he a good rep? Yes, it's in his book, Body of Secrets. I said, I don't know that. You're joking. No, it's on page 29, et cetera. He said, well, I'll look that up. Then he said, where can I find this? I said, it's in the National Archives. Do you have the number? I said, sure. And I gave it to him. And about a week later, he called back. He said, I'm sick. I said, why are you sick? He said, it's true. I couldn't believe this.
And I think that's the hardest thing for the average American to realize, that there really is people of this this outlook, people who have no moral conscience, who are quite willing to kill and even stage attacks on America to justify getting us into war. We're out of time. Our guest this evening has been Mr. Gregory Douglas. Thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure, as always.
Yes, Doctor. My pleasure as usual.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. That was Gregory Douglas, and we could go on for many more hours. I've spent many hours talking to Mr. Douglas off the air. His book is entitled Regicide, and I think it is such an important book, mainly because you're not going to hear about it through the regular media. And, of course, we think that it's so important that people get the book and they read the book and they find out that this is exactly what happened. The CIA, and this is all based upon Mr. Crowley's papers. You'll know what's real, what's opinion. It's all there. And of course, the report from the Defense Intelligence Agency, the list of 4,000 people, including my former next-door neighbor, a very successful surgeon in my own community. Of course, I've known him for 30 years. Never, of course, realized that he was associated with the Central Intelligence Agency. But they're there, all crawl across our country. Many of them feel they're doing the patriotic thing, protecting us from the wicked communists or the wicked terrorists or, well, whoever the new enemy is that we have helped to create and finance. And if you doubt that we finance the Islamic terrorist movement, you need to get the book Dollars for Terror, written in 1999 by a Swiss journalist who was trying to track down who was responsible for killing his friend. Well, this information is available. You need to find out if it's true, because if it is, you have an obligation to become informed and help us inform others. If it's not, you have nothing to worry about. Somebody had called in and asked who was really behind what was going on, and I suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which will give you the overview not only of the political, not only of the various groups, but who is behind all of these groups, the great foundations, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Club of Rome, the Bilderbergers, and, of course, how it all fits together. Well, this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us. If you believe in what we're doing, we hope many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or better still, either subscribe to our newsletter or join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then, of course, we hope that you will, of course, tell others about our programs. You remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We hope that, of course, that you will tell others about our website, which is radioliberty.com. And you can go up on that website and listen to our programs. Well, I guess we're on there, 5 hours a day, either on Radio Liberty or on the American Freedom Network at Genesis. Tell others about our programs. Help them to begin to evaluate what's really true. Because we have a controlled medium. There are a few voices of truth out here. We hope that you'll check our facts, determine if they are true, and join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. And lastly, please pray for America. Pray for our leaders and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Till Monday, Dr. Stan, good night. May the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us Lisa Rudnick. We're going to be talking about what's happening to the water situation here in the Monterey Bay area. Before we do, though, I want to comment that tomorrow in 50 national capitals across the world and in numerous communities across the United States, including right here in Santa Cruz and Austin, Texas, and literally every city where there's any accumulation of number of people, there are going to be peace marches against the war. Now, under other circumstances, I might be down there marching with them, because I certainly want you to know I totally oppose this war. But I just want to point out, who is it that has the ability to organize marches in 50 national capitals across the world? There are going to be a million people in London. Who picked the day? Who's coordinating this whole massive movement and provided the signs for many of them? A lot of people are going because they feel very deeply about this, and they've made their own signs. But there is a basic organization behind this, as there was behind the battle in Seattle and the demonstrations against the International Monetary Fund in Davos, Switzerland. And but, of course, this will be the biggest peace demonstration probably ever recorded. 50 national capitals throughout the world. Well, I just got something recently from Benjamin Krem, who is, of course, a Luciferian. He is the disciple of Maitreya. And this is supposedly the man who will soon announce himself as the world ruler. He is the Christ. He is the Imam Mahdi of Muslims. He is the Maitreya of the Hindu. He is the Messiah of the Jews. He's the Christ of the Christian. He is to be the world political and spiritual leader. And of course, you have to read the material that comes out of Share magazine, then they will tell you this. I believe this man is a fraud. I believe he's a demonic spirit, a demonic being. But there is a spirit world out there, and many of you don't believe in that. All I ask you is, if you're interested in getting their material that talks about the plan, and when they mention the plan, they always have a capital P, and they, of course, will tell you that this all has to do with Sanat Kumara and the fulfillment of Sanat Kumara's plan. Who is Sanat Kumara? S-A-N-A-T? Why, you just simply change the letters around in Sanat, and you'll find the spell Satan. They know that, but of course the average person involved doesn't understand this. The communists are involved, the radicals, the left wing, the environmentalists, and a lot of these are good people. They are really sincere people. They see what's going on in the world. They realize that another war is wrong, but you have to understand how this works. You mobilize both sides. You mobilize the side against the war, and then you mobilize the side in favor of the war. It's the old Hegelian dialectic, the thesis, which is the war, the antithesis, which is the anti-war movement, and then the synthesis, the new world order, the new world religion. And the material we got, they actually talk about how, while the attention is focused on the coming war, of course the important thing is that the officials of the United Nations are working quietly in pursuit of the coming world government. That's what it's really all about. It's really not about Saddam Hussein. It's not about oil, as most people think. It's not purely about a cover for the economy. It may not at all be used. It may be used as a justification for a biological attack, or at least the spreading of new epidemics throughout the world, because I believe the four horsemen of the apocalypse have already been released on the world. I believe we're entering the most difficult times of our lifetime. But, of course, it's much more important, or equally important, to understand what's happening spiritually, as to understand what is happening from a purely from a mechanical point of view. As Everybody is being manipulated. I'm being manipulated. You're being manipulated. We're going from code yellow to code orange. And, of course, you know, you're going to protect yourself by buying duct tape and clear plastic. That's how you're going to protect yourself from the coming chemical and biological attacks. If you believe that, you believe anything. And yet, look at the fear that has swept this country this last week, and it's all been manipulated and created. When you understand we're being manipulated, why, then you can understand what's going on. Now, we're being manipulated as far as the water situation. We're being told there's a shortage of water. Water is running out. Do you realize that in Saudi Arabia, water is more valuable than oil? Now, that may be a true statement, but that doesn't necessarily mean we have a horrible shortage of water here in the Monterey Bay area. And those of you who have heard my story 25 years ago when we had the efforts to build the Zayanti Reservoir, and they were intentionally blocked at that area that time because of the Zayanti humpback slug. Oh, we can't build the Zayanti Reservoir. We have a humpback slug there, and he's an endangered species. And they used the non-existent Zayanti humpback slug to block the reservoir. Why? Well, very simply, if you had plenty of water, you wouldn't have the saltwater intrusion, you wouldn't have the shortages, you wouldn't have the problems. You have to have the problems to come up with a solution, which is more control over your life and the life of everybody living in the area. Well, Lisa has been on top of what's happening with the water issue. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on with us tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Why don't you give us a little of your background, and then, of course, tell us what's happening here as far as the water crisis, which is increasingly developing in our community.
Okay. Well, I moved to this county in 1980 and was my property was under a mudslide that came down in 1982, and so I had my initiation to the San Lorenzo Valley in 1982 and became interested in soils issues and drainage issues. Started doing some conservation volunteer work locally, and then in 1994 got interested in timber issues because I saw some things that did not look right, and when I got involved, I became convinced that things certainly were not okay because I went to a public hearing and voiced my opinion. I started catching flack from a lot of people in the community, and I knew something was wrong. So
this was the effort then to stop timbering here in this community.
Yes, this was actually an issue back in 1994 where the county passed an ordinance that said you could only take 5 trees off your property every so often, and you're going to jump through all their hoops. And so I got involved in that and started talking to some of the local timber owners and became quite concerned for a number of reasons. Namely, number one is the fire hazard up here. So I got involved in this issue, and as I got more and more involved, it became more and more apparent that the people in control were not telling the truth. And so that perked my interest even more, and I stayed involved with it, and I joined a couple of local groups to try to help work through this issue. And one of the groups I joined at the time was the Valley Women's Club in the San Lorenzo Valley. Now, I would go to these meetings, and I think out of probably 10 people, maybe one of them would speak to me because they'd already heard that I had a different opinion from them. And so I stuck with it for about a year, went to these meetings, and in the meantime learned about a working group called Agenda 21. And I actually sat on the Agenda 21 committee for a couple of years. There were 12 round tables. I was on the forestry and biodiversity round table. And this was quite an eye-opening experience.
Now, could you explain to our listeners what the Agenda 21 committee was? Because this is really pivotal to an understanding of everything else. What is the Agenda 21 committee? Why were they formed? What were they supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm. The Agenda 21 came out of Rio de Janeiro in 1992 at the Earth Summit. And Santa Cruz County was one of the first counties. We were one of the trial counties. You can probably imagine why they would try to put this Agenda 21 through. And this Agenda 21 is a socialist document that basically seeks to end private property and to bring everything under collective collectivist control.
But of course, they don't really tell the people that.
No.
They of course conceal this under the mantra of sustainable development, and we of course want to be able to sustain the environment for future generations and the natural resources, and of course, Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century, by which they are going to enforce this sustainable development on the unsuspecting people of our community and the unsuspecting people of the entire world, because this is a worldwide project. Santa Cruz was certainly a pilot area, but they call it different things in different areas. Mm-hmm. But all throughout the world, they're doing exactly the same thing, trying to convince the people locally they have some input into this preconceived plan. Was that what you saw?
Yes, it was preconceived, and that was the real eye-opener. I sat on this committee for a couple years, and at the first meeting, all the people at the Sierra Club walked out. They said, we can't work with this group, because I was there and some other people who were reasonable who wanted to seek out the truth. And that's back in the days when I believed that you could sit face-to-face with these people and maybe come up with something reasonable. So when they left and walked out, I thought, well, okay, they don't want to participate. We're still going to keep this together. I went to meetings for a couple years and sat with people from Earth First and everything else and to see what we could come up with. We came up with something. We worked very hard on it and then didn't hear anything back from the coordinator who was putting these things together. And then about a year later, get a call. It's in the 11th hour review. Let us, you know, let's all look at it real quick. Well, when we went back to look at it, it didn't even resemble what we had as a committee had put together.
Sort of like what happened in the school board recently, where they had this committee and they spent all this time, you know, figuring out which of the schools to close, and they had a meeting and they closed three different schools.
Right.
They did this. All of these committees, you have to understand, are a bunch of waste of time. Mm-hmm. Is to give people the idea that really they have an input. They really don't. I remember when they were going to decide where Harbor High was going to go, and they had a committee. They worked for 3 or 4 years, and they went to meetings every month or week or something like that. And then after they got all through and they submitted the report, they picked a different site, the site that already they determined. And then we saw this recently, certainly with the smallpox. A special committee put together by the government at Atlanta, called by the CDC, to determine how we should deal with the possibility of smallpox epidemic. They said there's very little chance, and we don't want to start inoculating people, maybe 50,000 at the most, and let's wait and see if there's smallpox. Whereupon the federal government said, thank you very much, an excellent report. Now we're going to inoculate about 11 million people.
Because Rumsfeld owns all the stock in that company.
Right, it may very well be. But whatever the cause may be, what they use these committees to give you the impression we want an input from the people, mm-hmm. but the decision is already made
yes.
at the top, isn't it?
I've experienced that several times, not only with the Agenda 21 committee, but I also sat on a citizens advisory committee for the San Lorenzo Valley Water District, and it was the same thing. And I have to say, it was an immense waste of time. I put so much time and energy and effort into that. And our committee of 17 people who were very divided on the issues voted unanimously to keep the Waterman Gap property in the water district hands. They sold it. Our committee was a waste of time. And it's the same thing. They try to make it look like, oh, we've involved the public, we've done this and that, and they still keep saying, oh, we did what the committee wanted. They wanted this land protected. We said, no, we wanted you guys to keep it and restore it and protect it. There's nothing to protect up there right now because it's just a weed lot and a fire hazard. I shouldn't say just a weed lot and a fire hazard, but it needs a lot of maintenance. It's got a lot of deep-seated slides up there and erosion coming off the roads. And so we as a committee said, this piece of property needs to be restored and protected. But they sold it for probably about a half to a third of its true value to Semper Virens. And so it was the same thing. It was the same thing where you sit on these committees and you put your heart and soul into it, and guess what? They're going to do whatever the heck they want to do. And it's quite discouraging. I've been in several committees where this has happened. And it's going on all over the place. To bring it back to what's going on in this county, the Agenda 21 is happening every place. It's not always called Agenda 21. I believe that Santa Cruz County is one of the three areas in the country that will actually call it Agenda 21. A lot of other areas have different names for it, such as smart growth and all these other names that sound real friendly. But back to what Agenda 21 is, Agenda 21 seeks to curtail our transportation. It says right on the local Agenda 21 Santa Cruz County, it says, cars are not a sustainable mode of transportation in Santa Cruz County. Gradually eliminate all personal car use in downtown Santa Cruz and other cities to be completed by the year 2010. Phase in of the shuttle and other transportation options. Well, there's a whole page of these things that talk about what they want to do. And some of these things have already been put into code in this county, such as enforce no-cut, no-entry zones around streams. That came straight out of the Agenda 21. Well, guess what? We have an ordinance like that. The county has been sued over it. They've lost over it, but they've appealed. But again, this comes straight out of Agenda 21. Same with the farmers being curtailed on their use of methyl bromide. That comes straight out of Agenda 21. The things you see with the cars, you know, that they're starting to do what they call traffic calming, where they take out lanes and put median strips in the middle with a, you know, a bunch of trees and this and that in the middle. They call it traffic calming. But what they're really trying to do is get people out of their cars. So this Agenda 21 basically covers so many aspects of life. It covers transportation, population, economy, environment, on and on and on, just about every aspect of your life that you can think of.
Yeah, I think it's going apropos of the cars. That's why they want all the bike trails in.
That's right.
Because they want to get you onto bicycles. You say, that's crazy. They want to get you onto a bicycle. You know, all the government officials are driving their cars.
Right.
In fact, they don't even pay for their cars and their gasoline, but they want to get you out of your cars. And I'll never forget, many years ago, I used to occasionally go and get my car washed after church on Sunday, and there was a fellow there from the Planning Commission. And I said, look, why don't you, you know, when you're, say, on Soquel Avenue, why don't you insist that they build the buildings back, you know, from the sidewalk so that one of these days you can widen the street? Oh, he said, we don't want to widen the street. And I said, well, why don't you want to widen the street? He said, because we want to get the people out of their cars, you know, so that they have to ride bicycles. Well, now, he was getting his car washed at the
right.
same time I was. He wanted to get me out of my car, but he didn't want to get out of his car. And
right.
it is this elitist attitude. We know what's best for the common folks, that we are going to utilize our power. We're going to create control through chaos. We're not going to allow the widening of Highway 1. We're not going to allow any major thoroughfares across Santa Cruz, and we're not going to allow them to widen the streets. We're going to create such chaos that the people will eventually get on the bus or get on the bicycles. And of course, what they're doing is just creating more chaos, because unless they do it at the point of a gun, or they drive the price of gasoline up to $16 a gallon, people are not going to change their ways we're doing things.
That's right. And you were really right also when you said that these people are, you know, they end up being the worst hypocrites, and that has been my total experience with the whole timber issues. These people who I have been in contact with over all these years, watching their actions, they are the worst hypocrites. They want to tell us what to do, but the rule doesn't apply to them. You can't cut a tree, but they can. And I've seen this over and over and over. I have a lot of particular examples of people who go down there and rail against people cutting trees, and guess what? When it comes time to cut one on their property, it's no problem. So it's the same thing. They're, you know, it's the same age-old story of, you know, it's okay for them, but not for us. But back to the water district, to bring it back to after I had experienced this Agenda 21 fiasco, and after I sat on the SLV Water District Citizens Advisory Committee, attended all of their meetings. I had perfect attendance. I just, you know, I just had my heart and soul in this thing. And then the water district, once again, they decided to basically do what they wanted to do all along, which was sell the property for a fraction of the value to basically their buddies. And so now what they've decided to do with some of the money from the sales of Waterman Gap property is they want to start an environmental education program. The real problem with this environmental education program, there's two problems. One is SLV Water District has a very old infrastructure. We have problems with our water mains. We have fire hydrants that would not be effective in putting out a house fire. And so in these circumstances, you wonder why the water district wants to throw $30,000 to $60,000 per year to different environmental organizations and to the schools and to whoever is going to get on the campaign trail of the sky is falling, the earth is dying, give us your money, and we're going to indoctrinate you and your children. And that's what I see happening. The main danger of this, besides the water district ought to just be sticking with their business of delivering water, is that the folks that they have associated with through this process of selling the Waterman Gap property, and half of the board, the SLV Water District Board of Directors, are part of environmental organizations that stand to benefit. There's a real cronyism going on here where they intend to hand off money to their friends and family to do this indoctrination. And so I would really like to expose that to people and let people know what's going on up here.
Well, now, why don't they simply put the money into improving the water mains and the other things that need to be done to protect the people?
Exactly. That's just it. And that makes you wonder, what is the agenda here? And you'll hear different directors say, well, we know we're just trying to do a nice thing here. We're just trying to do a good deed. And my response is, if you want to do a good deed, you use your own money. And by the way, this isn't a good deed, because I have seen the politics of this water district. They have gone down and lobbied for very restrictive ordinances to take away private property rights in this county. This is not, and this is the majority of the board. I can't speak for the whole board of the SLV Water District. But there are a couple characters that have been, who are on that board, who have gone down and just lobbied left and right. Anytime there's a chance to take away private property rights, they're down there lobbying. And that's what their life is.
But, of course, if they can restrict access to water, they can restrict the ability to develop their people, ability to either develop their property or even to live on their property.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And, you know, through these timber wars, I've seen people who've been driven out. I've seen people who had a wealth sitting there on their property, and they're on food stamps now. And some of the people on this water board actively lobbied and campaigned for all these timber regulations. I didn't really finish talking about some of the timber regulations I was talking about earlier. In 1994, the county wanted what we called the five-tree ordinance, which is you can't take more than 5 trees. I believe it was 5 trees in 5 years without jumping through a bunch of hoops. And they said, well, you know, if you're just doing it and not selling the wood, then it's no big deal. It's not commercialization. However, if you have somebody come cut your wood and you even barter, give them the wood for the work, that's commercialization. So they were really tying people's hands. But then in 1997, a much more serious thing occurred with the timber. And that's when the county decided to reinterpret some of their zoning laws. At first, they didn't even start with an ordinance. As a matter of fact, the planning department started implementing without even checking with the board of supervisors to reinterpret some zoning regulations. They got caught. They went to the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors came up with this ordinance to make it all hunky-dory. We're going to reinterpret our zoning laws, and in one fell swoop, zoned a whole bunch of people out of timber with no environmental review whatsoever, none. And
basically what you're saying is they could not cut the timber on their own land. All they could do is pay taxes on it and try to keep it up, but they were deprived of their income.
That's right. And a lot of people, this was, you know, this is their nest egg. This is the money they have spent. They might have, you know, 10 acres. They might have 600 acres, but this is their investment. And many of these people had been maintaining properties for generations. And in one fell swoop, I'm sorry, you not only can't timber your land, you now can't manage it, because the thing is that most of the people who own acreage have to do a light harvest and able to support the land, to go and fix their roads, to fix their culverts, to fix their bridges, to do their erosion control. Where do you get the money? You get the money from the resource that grows there naturally. And so some of these people on the SLV Water Board have actively campaigned about this whole timber issue, and some of their spouses and friends and neighbors. And those are the same people who are now at these meetings with their hands out wanting money to educate the public about the environment. And what I've seen from these people, they are not qualified to educate anybody. They need to get educated.
But, of course, they have an agenda, and that really is this basic Marxist concept that people do not have a right to do what they want to with their property. And yet, of course, the entire concept of freedom and liberty is to limit the power of government, and the right of private property goes right along with life and liberty, and you will not see the word life and liberty used in the Constitution without associating the word property with that. Why? Because the right to property is one of the basic rights of liberty. If you can't own property, you're not a free man.
That's right.
And what they really want to do is take that right away from people. And a lot of these elitists, these people think that they know what's best. If we could only centralize more power with government. Now, the average individual who's involved in this really doesn't understand that it's much bigger than simply Santa Cruz. This is going on all over the country.
Oh, yes.
You read the book by Maurice Strong, his latest book, tells you about how they're going to control the whole world through local communities.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is they come up with these ideas at the international level. And then, of course, these will be, for instance, a local regulation on water, or a local regulation on fire districts, or a local regulation on timbering. And then this will be passed down to the federal government of the country, to the state, and then the local community. And these local water districts and fire districts and their planning commissions will actually accept these. And the people think, well, gee, this is local control. No, it's a control being imposed from above. Have you run into this?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And this is coming from ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, where this international group is planning from the top down. And as you say, it comes down through the federal, the state, and the local. And people are fooled into thinking this is all local stuff. No, these things are going on in this county. The people who are participating and taking away our rights, whether they know it or not, and I don't know who's aware of what they're really doing, but they are all taking directives from somebody who does know what they're doing. And this is all coming top down. Everything that I've seen, that I've read over these last few years on any of these international subjects, it all fits together. You know, I used to see all these little pieces of the puzzle and couldn't quite put it together. And now I see it. They've got a perfect blueprint that's being implemented. And there's so many of these issues happening in this county. And if people just stop and look around and look at all the issues we have, look at Agenda 21. Find that issue. You'll see it.
In fact, if any of our listeners want to get the Agenda 21 report, which is really fascinating to read, where they talk about we're going to get people out of their cars, and you know how we're going to just control farming by doing away with herbicides and fertilizers, and I mean, what they're talking about is a completely restructuring of society and using water and using all these regulations to alter society and effectively destroy Western civilization, to limit the access to energy, to limit the ability to cut trees. So what do you do if you can't cut trees? How do you get houses? Well, we have to have smaller homes, and the government will have to provide them for the people.
Yeah, government's always the answer, isn't it?
Every problem that they face today, they have a new government solution, and people don't understand that's what it's all about. The government controlling everything. Is that what you've come up with?
Yes, absolutely. And to make matters worse, they're in such cahoots with all the non-governmental organizations, the Sierra Club, the World Wildlife Foundation, all these people, they have this symbiotic relationship where they're feeding each other constantly. The feds are giving grant money to all these organizations to sue to get more regulations, you know, that sort of thing. And it's so rampant. I mean, there's I can't think of any land use in this county that's not heavily impacted right now. And, you know, back to what you were saying about reasonable use of your property, I mean, you know, if you are not nuisancing your neighbor, and there's laws to take care of that, it should be your right. If you're not hurting somebody, it should be your right. But somehow everything's been turned on its head, you know, especially in this county, that you can't do it without the permission of the government. We're going to tell you how to do it right. And, you know, you're going to follow our guidelines, or we're going to, you know, do this and that. It's become quite forceful, government by force. And
Well, that's what government is. Government is not benevolence or persuasion. Government is force. like fire. It's a dangerous servant, but a fearful master. Actually, George Washington said that, but we'll be right back here with Lisa Rudnick here at the American, pardon me, at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will decide you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us do what we do 5 hours every day, because that's how we're able to do what we do. We have people out there who believe in what we're doing and really want to help. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, which deals with the real background of why we're going to war with Iraq, and you're not hearing the truth. It has nothing to do necessarily with taking our attention off of what's going on. It has nothing to do with oil, although certainly there will be a benefit from oil, but that's not why we're really going to war. And then, of course, is there a possibility of a biological attack? If there were, how would you prepare for it? Would you buy more duct tape? Would you get more clear plastic to put over your windows? What would you do if there was going to be an attack? And remember, when the attack has come, it's too late to make preparations. So if you'd like to certainly have a better idea of what lies ahead and what you should be doing now, and if you'd like a free copy of our January newsletter, give us a call. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, you can get our newsletters off of our website at radioliberty.com. You can listen to our internet programs, and you can help us by telling other people about those internet programs so that they can begin listening and learning and begin to catch a grasp of what this is going on. Because everything that's happening is following a plan. It's not happening by accident. There are people of great wealth and great power who have a different vision of the world. And contrary to what many of our idealistic so-called liberals believe, that they're opposing these people of great wealth who have, are corrupting and our society and polluting the world, these are the very people who are pushing this entire world environmental movement. Why? Because of Lisa said so well. The solution to every problem is a new government control. And when you centralize all power in government, and the government is controlled by the politicians, who is going to buy and sell the politicians? Why, these very people of great wealth that our local liberals of a sincere idealists oppose, not understanding that the solution is not to increase the power of government, but to have moral and responsible people and to limit the power of government so that men can truly be free. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with Lisa, who will talk more about the problems we face today. And we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I would also, of course, invite you to give us a call. If you disagree, don't hold off. We'd love to hear from you. Again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Lisa Rudnick, and of course, we'd love to hear from you. If you agree, if you disagree, if you think that we just need all this new regulation, more government regulation, so that we can preserve the environment. I think everybody with any thought or concern is trying to preserve the environment, but you don't preserve the environment by keeping the people who own forests from timbering there. Timbering going in and, of course, getting the trees out so the other trees can grow, keeping the undergrowth down. The people who own the forest are going to take a lot better care of it than the government will. When the government gets hold of something, so often it goes to rack and ruin. Who are the largest polluters in the United States today? Why, the government at the nuclear plants at Rocky Flats and Hanford. It's going to cost literally hundreds of billions of dollars to clean up the environmental damage that's done there. In fact, many of them people don't even think they can clean up the problems that they've created. But go ahead, Lisa, tell us more of your experiences working within the various groups here. And as a sincere person concerned about what's happening to our community, and then, of course, coming to realize how this thing all fits together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to go back to the timber, and I'd like to point out that I don't own timber. I'm not from a timber family, although I'd be very proud to be from a timber family. But, you know, being around, trying to learn from the foresters over the last few years and from some timber families, I've been at this for about 9 years, and I've learned quite a bit just by listening and asking a lot of questions. And, you know, I've come to find that a nice, light, selective harvest, if it's done right, is going to improve the forest health so much. You get biodiversity. You get some sunlight down to the forest floor. We're in a real dense forest. There's nothing growing there. In a real dense forest, you know, the wildlife can't get through as easily. The birds can't fly through. You do a selective harvest, just like when you're thinning the carrots in your garden. You open it up so the other ones can get bigger. Everything flourishes. You have more water when you do a timber harvest. You're going to improve your quantity of water, and your quality will be just fine if you're following the rules. When you do a timber harvest, you follow over 1,000 regulations. Now, the other side would have you believe something quite differently, that people can just go out there and rape and pillage and exploit and this and that and the other, and it is not true. There are so many rules that it's gotten to be so ridiculous. If you can even get a plan through, you know, the cost of doing business is so exorbitant, and they have a lot of rules now that don't really fit. You know, when you come up with too many rules, you don't leave room for professional judgment out in the field, and that's what they've tried to do, is make so many rules that there's no wiggle room, and sometimes the rules don't fit the land. But, of course, the rules that are being imposed are from these, quote, environmentalists. I do not consider them to be true environmentalists. I consider myself, and I consider people who have cared for the land, who know the land, to be the true environmentalists. But according to these people who call themselves environmentalists, you shouldn't be cutting a tree at all. And a lot of times they'll mince words and they'll say, oh, we don't really think that. Sometimes there's a time and a place. But you know what? I've never heard them ever. These group of people who are always down fighting for more timber regulations, I've never ever heard them say one positive thing.
But, you know, they always talk about, oh, the spotted owl or the marbled marlin, or we're so concerned about the little deer, you know, running through the forest. And yet, of course, what they do is, you know, in areas where there are blighted trees and dead trees, they block the people, mm-hmm. foresters, from going in and, of course, taking those out because, of course, they're a fire hazard. And then you have these mammoth fires like they've had in New Mexico and other sure. areas. And then, of course, all the animals are burned to death.
Mm-hmm. What happens then? And we asked U.S. Fish and Wildlife that. They came to town and started participating in our local Fire Safe Council. And they were, you know, talking about the endangered species and how, you know, you can't just go cutting your bushes around your house because there might be a species. And we said, well, you know, if it comes down to our house and our lives and our property or that bug, guess what? The bug's going to lose out. And by the way, do you all from U.S. Fish and Wildlife have any data on how any of these critters do in a catastrophic wildfire? No, they didn't have any data on how these animals do in a catastrophic wildfire. So why would they be doing what they were doing, which was at the Fire Safe Council, trying to impose this huge, huge undertaking? It was... they want to impose a countywide habitat conservation plan. And I won't try to explain that whole thing. It would take me an hour to explain that. But it basically would have locked up all the land in this county. It would have been under federal control. If you wanted to do anything, if you wanted to cut a tree, if you wanted to plant your garden, if you wanted to do this or that, you're going to get permission through the feds.
Well, of course, was that done away with?
That was done away with. For now, because a few of us caught on to what was happening and just basically disrupted the thing. I mean, that's what it came down to. We had to disrupt it. But what they've done at this point is taken it underground. Basically, the planning department is still working on it with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and with the city of Scotts Valley.
Well, is this one of the, my understanding is the area where we live is sort of one of these areas that they want to ultimately have under total control. Mm-hmm. Is this one of these sort of, I don't know, like a heritage site or like one of these special sites, a wildland area?
Yeah, we have our own little biosphere, you know, where you know, they have all these terms, and we are, I forget the name for this particular biosphere, but yes, we're one of their hot spots of rare and endangered plants. So that's one reason they really decided to hit on this county, besides the other obvious reason, which, you know, the liberal aspect of this county, they figured they could get away with this. But yes, it comes back to the Wildlands Project, which is a part of Agenda 21, which seeks to take a minimum of 50% of the continental United States and make it off-limits to humans. It sounds crazy, but it's called the Wildlands Project. They have a website called TWP.org, and you can go there and see the maps and see what they want to do. And they're quite serious. It used to be eco-babble, but over the last 20 years, they've become quite well-funded, and they are actively implementing this Wildlands Project. And you can go and see where active projects are. There's one in this county. It's called the Ventana Project. And... And you can go and see where they've got these active projects and what their goals are. And their goals are, again, to take 50% of the U.S. and put it off limits to humans. They want to have the wild predators, the wolves, the mountain lions, the bobcats, and everything else. And what I say is, these people that want this, you make a wilderness and you send them there and don't let them come back. That's my solution to this whole thing.
Well, now, the website would be wildlandprojectrevealed.org. Is that it?
TWP.org for the Wildlands Project.
TWP.org.
Yes. Now, somebody told me that since we started and other people started catching on to this, that they took a lot of that stuff off that website. So I'm not sure what is still on there. But we have the documentation of what used to be on there. We have a lot of the maps. We being myself and some other people who've been working on this for the last few years, looking into what's going on here. But, you know, back to the Water District and this Waterman Gap property, this is how this ties in to the Wildlands Project, was this property up there, and I forget, the Waterman Gap property is something like 1,300 acres or 1,800 acres. It had an immense amount, still has, an immense amount of standing timber on it. Prime forest land. Like I said earlier, it has a lot of problems up there, a lot of things, slides and erosion that need to be fixed, but it's prime timber. It will probably eventually burn if something doesn't happen to it, if it isn't managed in some manner, which I don't see happening. But the Citizens Advisory Committee in the past for the San Lorenzo Valley Water District did, again, vote unanimously to keep that district land in the district hands, and the district went ahead and sold it. When they sold it to Semper Virens, for a fraction of its value, it is now being folded into the state parks and into Castle Rock State Park. Castle Rock State Park is a UN-protected area.
Okay, so this is how it all ties in mm-hmm. together. Let me just give a couple of websites. Mm-hmm. TWD.
No, P.
PWD.
TWP for the Wildlands Project.
Okay, TWP. Okay? TWP.org is their official website. And then the one that I gave a few moments ago, Jeannie had put up there, the Wildlands Project, maybe she'll give it again. That's where you can go and, of course, get the other side of it, where people on our side are talking what's going on. We've got Mike hanging on the line here patiently. Again, if you're out there listening, audience, would like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, the other website is Wildlands, www.wildlandsprojectrevealed.org. Wildlandsprojectrevealed.org is put up by the people who are opposing this. The other is TWP. Is that right?
Yes, those are the folks who are trying to implement
this. Right, okay, TWP.org. So we've got Mike on the line. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Lots of thoughts. Regarding her her latest comment about the Castle Rock area and the UN protection, I think the thought should be taken one step further, if you don't mind, that whoever protects the area also controls the area. And so that area is under UN control, with a capital C-O-N-T-R-O-L.
Yeah, because what they do is they get Americans to carry out their directives. And with all of these things from the United Nations, you're not going to see the United Nations troops sitting there with their machine guns and blue helmets on. It is simply that they tell our officials what we are to do with our land, and the land is no longer belonging to the American people, but to the people of the world.
And so many people say that the UN has no power, no strength, they're gutless or mindless or whatever.
Well, of course, the people who say that are the ones who are mindless. They don't understand what we're really dealing with. We're dealing with a world government that now has a world court and an international criminal court and a world police force, and certainly it has a parliament, and it very well soon have a world tax and a world army. In fact, really, of course, we have, in effect, a world army, which has been NATO in the past. Basically, we're moving towards a situation where everything will be controlled by the faceless bureaucrats who are dedicated to a new world order and, of course, a new world religion. So anything else, Mike?
Yeah, back to the subject of bugs, which seem to be on par with human beings these days, with equal rights, et cetera.
Sometimes even with more rights.
That's right.
Well, it seems that way. We're all living organisms, after all, and so it doesn't matter which one is bigger or has more brains or happens to be made in the image of God. We're all equal.
Right.
But, you know, over the years, I've read different things. I wish I could remember the figures, like in National Geographic, et cetera. About bugs. Now, it seems like there are so many more bugs, actually, on the Earth than there are humans. It seems like there's trillions and trillions of bugs, whereas there's only billions and billions of us. So it seems like humans are actually in the minority. And so now, with all this coming about between humans and bugs, I wonder about minority rights. You know, don't we have rights?
Maybe we should have an affirmative action program for human beings, is what
there
you're saying.
Go.
It really seems like we're being discriminated against.
Right, well, we are, of course, but you have to understand that these people really have an anti-human agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And when you understand that, then you can begin to understand it. And, of course, we always tell our people, if you really want to understand what this is about, read Tom Clancy's book, Rainbow Six. Tom Clancy understands it. He's read much of the same material that Lisa has read. And, of course, as he said in the beginning of the book, there's information in this book the government doesn't want you to know about. And he's absolutely right. Rainbow Six by Tom Clancy. It's a fast-moving adventure novel. And when you get done, you'll understand what it's really about.
Yeah.
Okay,
now,
anything else,
well,
Mike?
Well, yeah, what I really called about was ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Issues. Was that it?
Initiatives.
Initiatives, excuse me. The name comes up very often on Stan's programming, but seldom do I hear it actually explained. First of all, the words we just said, the Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, International Council, explain, please, what is this?
Can you explain what ICLEI is?
Well, that'd be pretty hard to explain. I have a huge document here. Let me see. I could read some parts of it. I don't know if there's a website.
We hardly have enough time to do that. But basically, they come up with all the regulations for the local communities, mm-hmm. an elite group that is controlling local communities. How would that be? No local community policy.
Well, right there, an international community that is reaching its fingers down into the local areas.
Absolutely. That's
what they
want. That's what they call local control. In other words, mm-hmm. we are going to control what happens locally.
Mm-hmm.
And Maurice Strong's latest book, which I forgot maybe the title of it, One World or something, you know, lays this all very, very clearly. This is all being put together by these elitists of fabulous, fabulous wealth, these multi-billionaires. And, of course, with the case of Marie Strong, strong ties to the occult, according to the article in West Magazine, his wife is a witch. And, of course, he had put together a haven for the occultists there in Colorado called La Baca. And you would find, according to West Magazine, leading people like Henry Kissinger and Robert McNamara going there. Remember Robert McNamara? He's the man who sent our boys to Vietnam to fight and bleed and suffer and die, but never be allowed to win. Anything else, Mike?
Well, back to the UN thing again. People say they have no power, et cetera. Maybe in some ways they don't, but, you know, they've spawned the NGOs, which reach down into our lives, attaching themselves to whatever local power centers they can, local business associations and local county and city governments, and they co-opt the power of those organizations. NGO, non-governmental organization, sounds very nice for people who don't like government, but these people are absolute government, leading to a central world control that has no limit, and
that's
they'll
right.
do us in completely.
And, of course, the whole idea laid out in the Millennium Conference was the NGOs were to work with the United Nations to pursue this goal, this dream of one world order. Hey, thanks so much for calling, Mike. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, Lisa, let's go ahead and we've got about 3 or 4 more
okay.
minutes. So.
If I could follow up with what he was saying about the number of environmental groups, I'm reading some numbers here. There's currently more than 4,000 environmental groups in America today. And the 12 biggest environmental pressure groups in the United States alone enjoy combined annual revenues of $1.95 billion. That's annual.
Now, where's all that money coming from?
Well, it's coming from people who think they're saving a furry critter. And this is the danger of giving to these groups. I really don't know a good, quote, environmental group to give money to. I suggest if people are doing it, they stop immediately because it's fueling this whole thing. To think that these 12 biggest environmental pressure groups are raking in $1.95 billion annually, that's every single year. And it says on this paper, it says, this is a quote from Hugo Gordon of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He says, among the Green Dozen are some nature conservancies, $731 million, and the Wildlife Conservation Council, $311 million. They're merely left of center. He goes on to say that there are genuinely extreme organizations, the World Wildlife Fund, $118 million a year, and the Sierra Club, $73 million a year, that militate aggressively against the free market and attack private property rights to the detriment of the economy and the majority of ordinary people. And I can't agree with that more. He goes on to say that they're a socialist Taliban, and I agree with that as well. I mean, I've tried to work with these people. They do not deal in truth. They deal in absolute fabrication, and they never fail to show up at a meeting to take your private property rights away. It's happening all over this county, and the reason that they've latched on to the water districts is you control the water, you control the people. We have a lot of water up here in this valley, and I think that there are people controlling things in this county that do not want the water to be utilized to be shared with South County or anything else. We need to create this water shortage to control people. And there is a 4-page document adopted by the County of Santa Cruz. It's put together by the Sierra Club. And they talk about limiting people and knuckling down slowly so people don't complain. And then once we've got it a certain way, then we can get more aggressive. And this is what they're doing. And this is written in the, I don't have the exact name of it right in front of me, but it can be found online. And it's a water policy. Oh, here is Santa Cruz Countywide Water Conservation Plan. It's dated April 5th, 2000. It's a 4-page document. You can get online, the county website, or there's a number of groups here locally that I should mention who are working on some of this stuff that people could contact. One group that's been working on this is Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, and they have a website at freedom21santacruz.net. That's all one word, Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, with the 21 being the digits, 2-1. So freedom21santacruz.net will give you some of this. Citizen Review Online is a very good site. Redwood Republic. These are some good sites where people can go and get more information on these subjects. I don't know if we have more time or not, but there's certainly a lot more to talk about with these water issues. And
well, Lisa, we're going to have to get you back on.
Okay.
I want to get you on to some of our other programs because you're very articulate.
Well, thank
and,
you.
Of course, there's so much going on. We just got something in the mail today. Friends of Soquel Creek, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you, we just want to maintain a sort of a normal habitat here at Soquel Creek. Well, you know what this is really all about, of course. And instead of addressing the problems and trying to solve them, they're going to use all the environmental gobbledygook and psychobabble, you know, to mobilize the people to save Soquel Creek. But, you know, eventually, of course, instead of storing the water, protecting the rights of the people who live out, away from the municipality so they can have wells, you know very well before long they're going to be talking about, you know, taking away the well rights or putting meters on our wells.
Yeah, we've been through that.
Everything is aimed at control.
That's right. Every aspect of your life. And again, it comes from Agenda 21. And I would urge people to type that into their search engine. If you haven't looked at Agenda 21, look at it, and you'll see I can't call them coincidences, you know, that these things all line up. It's a blueprint, and people need to be aware of it.
Amen to that. Well, Lisa, thank you so very much. I mean, our listeners out there, if you'd like to get a copy of the Santa Cruz Agenda 21, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's the Santa Cruz Agenda 21. Everybody should read it. It's the most incredible document. Our Congressman Sam Farr says he doesn't know anything at all about it, but of course on the first page is a letter from him congratulating the committee for the fine job they've done. I guess he has a very, very short memory. I'm sure it's not that he's being disingenuous or not telling the truth. He just writes letters congratulating the group but has no idea what they are.
Right.
Lisa, thank you. Thank you for being so dedicated and really sticking with us. I know how frustrating it is to attend these meetings. I don't dare go to them anymore because I'd pull out what little hair I still have. But you're there representing us, and I hope you'll keep us abreast of this. And I do want to spend more time with other programs getting this information out across the county.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, certainly if you want to go to the Range magazine this month, it has a big article on the Nature Conservancy. The spring 2003 issue just came out. You can go to the internet. It's www.rangemagazine.com. That's rangemagazine.com. And, of course, we just once again want to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you listen to our programs and you agree with our message, we hope that many of you will decide you're going to become members of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to call, that is area code 800-544-8927 or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America really is at war. America is under attack today. Remember our website. It's radioliberty.com. Please tell other people about our programming. Please tell them about our website, because we want people all across the country listening in. And, of course, our purpose is to educate people about the true nature of the battle in which we're engaged until people understand that there is a battle, that there are people who would take away our freedom. And behind that effort are dark and sinister spiritual forces. And I think we'll see this becoming increasingly obvious in the weeks and months that lie ahead as we move into a war, apparently, short of either the resignation, assassination, or exile of Saddam Hussein. We will go to war in Iraq in the near future. Well, pray for peace. Pray that as few lives as possible will be lost in this terrible time. Please remember to pray for our leaders. Pray for revival in America, because if the American people don't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on America forever. And lastly, we ask you to pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. We'll be right back.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hey. Lisa's a very good speaker.
She did a great job.
She knows her forestry. That's her specialty. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I'll talk to her about ICLEI then, so she won't hesitate on that.
Okay, good. Well, she, you know, we want to get her on, and we've got you on next Thursday.
Really? For sure, huh?
For sure. I'm so sorry for the mix-up.
That's okay. This is the Range magazine, and there's a woman that puts it out of Nevada. And she wants to do an interview with me. I'm going to wait on that. But there's a huge article on Nature Conservancy, how they're taking the land. So this is a real good...
Basically, somebody called me from the Republican women over in the Valley, and she just heard the end of our interview last Saturday. And so I gave her your telephone number, Joe Parrish's number. I invited you to come over there, and she was going to talk.
Joan Parra, Michael and Joanne are going to give a presentation at NRA on
really?
Monday.
Wonderful.
And what happens